On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Chris Rechsteiner, VP of Turing Group, on to provide a framework to help you evaluate your remote security environment. Plus, Curtis talks about how security attackers are having to get creative to find new and unique ways to stay stealthy and how your organization will protect itself. Plus, Brian, Curtis, and I have a friend of Twyatt back on, Tim Titus, CTO of Pass Solutions, to talk about TotalView and the convergence of NetOps and SecOps. You don't want to miss it. Twyatt on the set. This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you from LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 387, recorded April 3rd, 2020. Can NetOps and SecOps live in harmony? This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Worldwide Technology. Worldwide Technology's advanced technology center is like no other testing and research lab, with more than $500 million of equipment, including solutions from key partners like NVIDIA. And it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more and get insights into all that it offers, go to wwt.com/twit. And by Thinx Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Do You Hear About Us box. And by IT Pro TV. Get the most up-to-date IT training with IT Pro TV. Their video courses, virtual labs, and practice tests will give you everything you need to become a successful IT professional. Visit itpro.tv/enterprise for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. Use code ENTERPRISE30 at checkout. Welcome to Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Moreski, your guide through this big, giant world of the enterprise. But I definitely can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their field, starting with our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's the senior editor over there at Dark Reading. Curtis, what's the latest coming from the great state of California? Oh, sorry, not California, Florida. How are you doing down there?
We're doing all right, sheltering in place along with the rest of the country, but doing well. We're holding our own, trying to remain connected via electronic means to the rest of the world, and so far doing what I think is a pretty good job. The stir craziness hasn't hit yet, and we're going to try to stave it off for another hour or so here with our friends at the Twyatt Riot.
That's right. We have lots of entertainment here and give you all the enterprise IT news from the week. Thank you, Curtis, for being here. But speaking of being connected and being one of our security experts as well, he is great over there at F5 Networks. Mr. Brian McHenry, Director of Global Security Solutions over there at F5. Bam, it's great to have you back. I'm guessing that the world of security is changing quite a bit, right?
Yeah, the ramp up in remote access has been pretty phenomenal to watch, and really impressed by a number of our customers how quickly they've been able to scale up remote access so that they can enable their most of their workforce to stay home and stay safe and keep on being productive.
Well, folks, we've had quite the week in enterprise news. Not only are we going to have on the VP of Server Central Turing Group, he's going to discuss remote endpoints from a remote security standpoint. Plus, as cyber defenses improve, adversaries are shifting to stealthy live-off-the-land type tactics. Here's how to protect yourself. Plus, we have a great guest, Tim Titus, CTO of Pass Solutions. He's going to talk about his new TotalView package and the convergence of NetOps and SecOps. But before we get into all that goodness, let's go ahead and jump into this week's blips. Now, have you heard of smart networks? They aren't discussed that much, but they do fuel the data economy and assist businesses in collecting data they couldn't have collected themselves. Now, smart networks are loose clusters of Internet of Things devices that are actually located around the world. Now, their networks serve as lightweight intermediate servers for thousands of data companies that depend on full access to publicly available data around the world. Now, millions of completely legal and leased IoT devices act as proxies to fuel our data economy. Now, these smart networks are called proxy networks and are rarely reviewed and analyzed or even evaluated to find out how they actually impact the modern data economy. Now, a new report came out recently called the Proxy Market Research Report. It's providing more insights into how valuable data is to researchers and companies. What it shows is data aggregators need fast and reliable tools, while market researchers did not mind that much to get data slowly, and if that meant reduced costs and safer access to local data. Now, the survey also talks with experts, and they confirm that their work would not be possible without robust smart networks of IoT devices, especially mobile and desktop devices. Now, these lightweight servers are also called residential proxies. Now, most respondents noted how residential proxies provided the best access to data. In fact, it was shown that any market research project might have a variable of 300% in terms of cost efficiency for smart networks. It's also showing that major proxy provider can give you powerful tools for a variety of uses. When we talk about market data gathering, scraping, or aggregating public data and prices, some providers are at least three times better than others when we consider speed, scale, and efficiency and functionality. So if you're in the market for data and you need some assistance for your organization, it might be time for you to check out smart networks.
So now we know Zoom, well, it's a heaping helping of insecurity. Working from home has become the new normal for many technology and knowledge workers, and along with the move to remote work, video conferencing services such as Zoom have become a key technology linking people together. And with popularity, well, comes scrutiny. Researchers have begun turning up security and privacy flaws in Zoom, which has had success as a brand during the pandemic. In late March, for example, one Red Team member found that Zoom could display Universal Naming Convention, or UNC, paths as links, which, if clicked, would send a username and password hash to an attacker-controlled system. Zoom has had a rough few weeks. Attackers have started registering domains that appear related to the company, with more than 1,700 Zoom-themed domains registered globally. Bishop Fox researchers point out that other platforms have had to deal with security scrutiny over the years, giving the example of when Cisco bought WebEx. That video conferencing platform had to weather a spate of bug reports as well. Yet Zoom's decision to work around platform security for an arguably smoother user experience suggests the company or its developers may not support mature security processes. All of this is in addition to security worries about things like Zoom bombing, in which attackers hijack a Zoom conference displaying lewd or disruptive video in educational or business meetings. Zoom may be critical in these modern times, but it's going to have to work out its security problems if it's not going to create, well, its very own epidemic of security problems.
And in the world of security solutions, MongoDB has introduced field-level encryption. Back in December 2019, the database company added a fairly radical new feature to the platform, field-level database encryption. At first glance, one might wonder whether this is a meaningful feature in a world that already has at-rest storage encryption and in-flight transport encryption like HTTPS. But after a little closer analysis, the answer is a resounding yes. MongoDB's field-level encryption offers the ability to store certain parts of the data in its document store encrypted. The community version of MongoDB allows for explicit encryption of fields in client-side applications. Data is encrypted on the client application side, then sent and stored by the MongoDB server instance. This obviously gives us the most benefit of both in-flight and at-rest encryption. But there's another layer of defense offered here that might not be as immediately obvious. System administrators and database administrators as well represent one of the toughest problems of data confidentiality. A computer needs a human operator with all the privileges necessary to start, stop, maintain, and monitor services. This entails the sysadmin effectively having access to any data either stored on or processed by that system. At-rest encryption of database on disk does very little to solve either the sysadmin problem or the DBA problem. Although sysadmins can't get meaningful data by cloning raw disks of the system, they can easily copy the unencrypted data from the running system once storage has been unlocked. Now, although this report focuses heavily on MongoDB, Mongo is not the only or even the first database technology providing field-level encryption. A competing NoSQL database platform named Couchbase implemented FLE a year earlier. Amazon also introduced FLE to segment vendor access to protected form fields in its CloudFront CDN back in 2017. Field-level encryption is likely to become as common as one-way salted hashes of passwords as a standard security measure.
Remote work, school, and play is a culture and environment shift for many people and organizations around the world. Now, it's not only has sparked service usage, but it's also increased the demand in learning. Now, some are actually filling the time void with learning new skills and technology. Now, we've seen companies like Scholastic to actually start offer free content to everyone. Now, these new free offerings have sparked a learning revolution around the world. And it's no wonder that this has also triggered other companies to do the same. In fact, Pluralsight seems to be the next in line to provide some of the value for the rest of the world. Now, Pluralsight CEO just announced that they will be offering access to its entire library to new users for free. Now, its library consists of around 7,000 plus technology courses, and it's valid through all of April. Now, the catalog of tech training is quite extensive for both from mobile, desktop, and web development, DevOps, and IT, to actually creative things like Adobe Premiere and other creative software. Now, this is quite an extensive list, and it has a very current set of content as well. Now, what this has also sparked is some response from other organizations around the world to offer free tools to help spark learning and productivity as well as creativity. In fact, Apple is following suit with a 90-day free trial for both its editing software Final Cut Pro X and the music production software Logic Pro X. Now, Apple extended the 30-day trial period to actually encourage people to stay at home at the time of lockdown in their respective countries and be creative. Now, although this might seem like ploys to get you to use their stuff and stroll into their ecosystem, it also provides a good value to those getting started in many other facets. Now, maybe it just might spark you to go pick up a new hobby or skill, or maybe it's just your chance to get started and jumpstart on your next career.
Well, a new Mage Cart skimmer is framing its attack. A new Mage Cart skimmer, dubbed, oddly enough, MakeFrame, has been observed compromising 19 victim websites. The skimmer was named for its ability to make iframes for skimming payment data. Researchers from RiskIQ have identified three versions of MakeFrame with varying levels of obfuscation, ranging from clear JavaScript code to encrypted obfuscation. In some cases, they observed MakeFrame using compromised websites for all three of its functions, hosting the skimming code, loading the skimmer onto compromised websites, and exfiltrating the stolen payment information. Mage Cart Group 7 also used victim websites for skimmer development, a technique seen in its breach of OXO in 2017 and 2018. RiskIQ says MakeFrame's targets are similar to those seen in other Mage Cart Group 7 attacks. Each victim site belongs to a small or mid-sized business, and none are especially well known. For all of the 19 victim websites, MakeFrame is hosted on the victim's domain. Stolen data is posted back to the name server or sent to another compromised domain for exfiltration. Mage Cart Group 7 then uses the exfiltration method of sending the stolen information as .php files to other infected websites.
Now, if you're worried about the effectiveness, the security, and the size of the ecosystem of remote communication tools, there are a number of possible choices for you on the web. Now, some are free, like Zoom and Skype, but others bring more features for just a small fee. Now, to assist with downstream markets, Microsoft has announced a whole slew of new products, but at the core of the release is a major change into how the company is marketing its tools and services to consumers. Now, Office 365, which has long been a brand of the company's subscription service for its productivity tools like Word, Excel, and Outlook, is not going away. On April 21st, it will be replaced by the new Microsoft 365 plans, including new personal and family plans for up to six people at $6.99 and $9.99 respectively. Now, that's the same price as the existing Office 365 personal and home plans. And these new Microsoft 365 personal and family plans will include access to Outlook and Office desktop apps like Windows and Mac OS. Now, it also offers 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage per person, including unlimited access for more secure OneDrive personal vault services, and 50 gigabytes of Outlook.com email storage, Skype call recording, and 60 minutes of Skype landline and mobile phone calls. And since this is now Microsoft 365 and not Office 365, you can also get Windows 10 technical support with the subscription as well as additional security features to protect you from phishing and malware attacks. Now, Microsoft isn't just changing the branding and launching these new plans. It's also highlighting a few new capabilities in its various applications that are launching today and are coming coming in the coming months. Now, Microsoft Teams gets a personal edition, actually. But in its efforts to help people bridge their work and personal lives, it will now launch a new Teams edition for consumers as well. The personal Teams view will actually look a little bit different. It actually has shared calendars for the family, access to OneDrive vaults, photo sharing, and many other features, but it sits on the same code base as the business version. Now, you'll also be able to do video calls and share to-do lists as well. Now, in addition to the Teams announcement, there's been an announcement of the availability of the new AI-powered editor in Word Online as well. Now, this editor is now the Microsoft editor, and the company is expanding it to well beyond Word also. Now, the AI-powered service is now available in 20 languages in Word and in Outlook.com. And maybe most importantly, it will be available at the Microsoft Edge and Google Chrome plugins as well as too. So for you to for you kind of spreadsheet jockeys out there, Microsoft also has some good news, especially if you want to use Excel to manage your personal budget. In partnership with Plaid, you can now link your bank accounts to Excel and import all of your expenses into the spreadsheet. Now, with that, you can actually categorize your spend and build your own personal mint. Now, this feature, dubbed Money in Excel, will actually launch in the U.S. in the coming months. Now, while most of the new features here focus on existing applications, Microsoft is also launching one completely new app called Microsoft Family Safety. Well, this app is coming to Microsoft 365 subscribers on iOS and Android, and it will bring together a set of tools that actually help families manage their online activities and track the location of their family members. Now, lots of this new announcements and offerings for you and your organization you should definitely check out, especially if you're looking for something for the fam and haven't found the right tool just yet. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Worldwide Technology. Now, if you ever get a chance to visit the Worldwide Technologies Advanced Technology Center, you should definitely go. It's a truly amazing site. Twit actually got to visit it this year, and they were really amazed by how amazing it is. Listen to what the lab contains. It contains more than $500 million in equipment from hundreds of OEMs and key partners ranging from high-tech heavyweights like Cisco, VMware, to AI disruptors like NVIDIA. Now, when you're developing products, you want to work with an organization you can trust, right? Well, WWT is that trusted partner. They will stay with you for over the years. In fact, many of the customers have been with them for over a decade because they know WWT is where they can go to get the answers they need to make sure their business is run right. Now, with all that it has to offer, the ATC really is an incubator for IT innovation. Listen to what else it has to offer. On-demand and schedule labs or workshops like NVIDIA's Deep Learning Workshop, along with hundreds of other labs representing the newest advances in architectural solutions to accelerate customers on artificial intelligence and machine learning journeys, and much, much more. Now, you've worked on large projects before, right? Well, sometimes you want to learn about the products before you launch. Well, WWT's engineers use these environments to quickly spin up proof of concepts and pilots using the sandbox so customers can confidently select the best solutions. In many cases, this actually reduces concept time from months to weeks and increases speed to market. Now, they offer lab as a service. It's a dedicated lab space within the ATC. Here, customers can perform programmatic testing using their vast technology ecosystem that WWT has to offer. And it's virtual, so you can take advantage of it fully and its unique benefits around the world 24/7. Now, WWT's engineers work in these labs every day. They beta test new solutions. They based on the latest and greatest NVIDIA technologies and building reference architectures and custom integrations to help their customers make decisions and see results faster with much less investment. Now, WAT has launched their new digital platform encompassing the ATC ecosystem. Now, this ecosystem creates a multiplier effect of knowledge, speed, and agility anywhere, anytime around the world for their customers. Get access to articles, case studies, hands-on labs, and other tools that make the difference in today's fast-paced world. To learn more about WWT and the ATC and become a member of their growing community, go to WWT.com/twit to create an account and gain access to their on-demand labs today. WWT simplifies the complex. That's WWT.com/twit. WWT delivering business and technology outcomes around the world. And we thank WWT for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the Bites. And first, we have the VP of Server Central Turing Group, Chris Rechsteiner, to discuss remote endpoints from a remote security standpoint. Chris, take it away.
Okay, so the question came up about endpoints and specifically what's happening with VPN and remote security in light of a dramatically increased work-from-home population. Well, it goes without saying that the number of endpoints is going through the roof. And these devices have always been there, whether they be mobile phones, laptops, anything else that people are using. The change now is that the focus on the security of them is greater than it's ever been because that's the only way people are working. And one of the things that we're seeing is that a lot of people have been sort of sideswiped by the fact that these remote endpoints do need to be secured and what the costs associated with that will be. It may be simple. It may be an increase in licensing where you're going to see a dynamic rise and fall just like you would in compute or memory or storage resources in the cloud. The problem with that is if you don't have it budgeted for, it's going to be a significant increase and a very real hit to your organization in the short term. However, if you don't have that elasticity built in, you're going to hit the wall about whether or not you can actually secure them. So in order for that light to be turned on, the license purchases need to take place and ultimately be staffed and available for the organization. And what that means when I say that they have to be staffed and available is that they have to be purchased. They have to be added into the inventory systems. They have to be able to be deployed. They have to be able to be set up, administered, and then ultimately executed by all parties involved when there isn't another way to access internal systems without that platform. The reason why I highlight this, and it seems a little bit convoluted, is we're seeing more and more instances of organizations sending out requests for their employees to help them get connected to remote systems. However, all of those systems and all of the instructions reside on the intranet, and you can't get to the instructions or the systems because you're not on the intranet. So you have a very chicken and egg situation arising. Now, this is something that seems somewhat silly, but it's happening very, very regularly, and it's something organizations need to be aware of right now. Kind of a dotted I or a crossed T, but at this point in time, the clarity and consistency and really the depth of those communications becomes paramount so everybody knows what to do. Now, getting back to the endpoint side, what's going to happen is a lot of organizations are going to expand the number of endpoints under management, whether that's VPNs, MFA processes, what have you, probably combinations of all of them. But what's really going to come into play is what that looks like long term. How do you address the requirements for a quote-unquote new norm or a new model of being able to secure employees at all times from any location? Again, these are all things that can be done, but it's never been approached from an all-employees perspective. It's always been a subset of the organization, a subset of the overall management team, or some group that has a specific need. Now, with everybody being part of this process, it really does show that in your planning, you have to be 100% committed to understanding the edge cases of your environment. That means when 100% of the people are remote, can you support it? Does the elasticity of that licensing support that growth? And if the elasticity doesn't, does the physical addition of that infrastructure prohibit you from securing those devices? It may not, but all of those questions have to be answered. Most importantly, and this is something we're urging a lot of people to take a very serious look at, is when you look at VPN access for remote endpoints, one of the key things is to understand what applications and environments those endpoints are actually using. In many instances, those VPNs are being applied only to redirect traffic through the corporate network and then back out to third-party SaaS platforms, things like Salesforce or SAP. While that makes sense and it does put everyone on the network for access to other systems, if the majority of that use is via a SaaS platform, O365, Google, G Suite, what have you, all you're doing is tying up licenses for what is essentially public transit of data. And what I mean by that is a lot of organizations are simply bringing their employees into their network in order to turn around and pass it back out to the public internet to get to these SaaS platforms. Again, sounds super logical. Everybody's familiar with this process. Yet organizations are racing out, scrambling to expand this licensing, incurring all of these costs simply to allow people to log into a VPN to then turn around and go out over the public internet to gain access to third-party SaaS platforms. There's no reason for that licensing to take place if the systems are not fully contained on the intranet. There are many ways to approach this, and it's something that as you look at the use cases of each endpoint, what are they trying to accomplish? What are the applications that they need to gain access to? How are they going to use them? How efficiently do they need access to them? Meaning it might be okay to be directly connected, that there isn't a benefit in any way for it to go through the corporate VPN. In other instances, it might if there's a direct connect from your network to those third-party SaaS platforms. But all of those conditions need to be weighed so that decisions can be made and really made intelligently in such a way that there isn't a need for licensing to occur to provide access to public platforms. Again, a very simple question, something that a lot of organizations are going to struggle with in really the reaction and the desire to move very quickly and support their teams while working remotely. But take a minute, take a deep breath, look at what each individual group is going to need, how they do their work, what they're going to be required to achieve when they're working remote, if it's 100% productivity or some subset of that, which may also be practical. And then align the requirements for VPN, for multi-factor authentication, for any remote access and endpoint management in line with exactly what those use cases will be. In many cases, it's better to overreact and lock everything down and then slowly open it back up. But the inverse of that is true, to open it up and then slowly lock everything back down. In my experience, what I've seen happen and be most beneficial is locking everything down and then slowly opening access back up when you realize that a connection may not be needed in order for an organization or a group or an individual to do their job, at which point in time decisions can be made to change those permission policies and allow that traffic to bypass the corporate network, for instance, in order for the day-to-day operations to be continued. Again, lots of factors at play in here, but the idea around how you make the decisions as to who does or doesn't receive endpoint security, look at it on a case-by-case basis and really analyze and understand what those endpoints are and the nature and level of the security they need, because 100% probably isn't going to be applicable for everyone, and it may result in cost and process challenges that are not of the highest priority for your organization right now. As this evolves, we'll be happy to share more information that we see and learn both from our customers and from colleagues in the industry. And as always, if you have any questions, please hit us up at servercentral.com. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for Chris Recksteiner, VP of the Turing Group, for a really good framework on evaluating your remote security environment, especially in today's climate. Well, folks, it's now time for our next bite. We have a really interesting one. Nowadays, security attackers are having to get creative to find unique ways to stay stealthy. Curtis, what's going on here?
Well, attackers are learning to live off the land. You just have to worry about trying to get them off when they're living off of your land. As cyber defenses improve, adversaries are having to shift to stealthy living off the land attacks that use the target's own tools against them. So what are we talking about, and how can you defend yourself? Well, why invest in top-shelf malware, as many of the attackers do, just to have it turned away by antivirus tools again and again? Why launch a cyber attack like that when your target is already full of perfectly good attack tools just waiting for you to use them against their owners? More and more threat actors are coming to precisely that conclusion because as cyber defenses improve, adversaries are shifting to stealthy live off the land or LOTL attacks that defy many automated security measures. So here are some ways you can begin countering that threat. But first, what do we mean by living off the land? This refers to fileless, malwareless attacks that turn a system's own native tools against them. Bad actors can use perfectly legitimate programs and processes to perform malicious activities, blending into a network and hiding among the legitimate processes to pull off a stealthy exploit. Traditionally, attackers have exploited a target environment and then pushed their own tools onto target machines. But with living off the land techniques, the attacker uses the compromised machine itself and components of the operating system to attack that system further and to spread to other machines in the environment. So the compromised machine operating system becomes, in essence, the attacker's toolkit. The attacker uses its resources in place on the network to undermine the entire targeting environment. In other words, criminals have realized that the most subtle and effective way to wield control over a system is to use the same exact operating system components and methods that are used by system administrators. Now, some of the tools commonly exploited for living off the land attacks include PowerShell scripts, VB scripts, WMI, Mimikatz, and PSExec. These are administrative and troubleshooting tools that are already in the environment and won't set off alarm bells when an attacker uses them. So what's an example of this attack? From 2017 to 2018, there was an outbreak of the Petya, not Petya, ransomware, which used a software supply chain attack as the initial vector to compromise an update process in the accounting software program. So the thing that is counterintuitive is that if you have really good defenses, it makes one of these living off the land attacks more likely. They've been around for quite a while. The thing is, as defenses get better, they're becoming more common. In fact, in 2019, most attacks in CrowdStrike's research and incident reporting were malware-free for the first time. Every type of environment is susceptible to this kind of attack, but attackers are more likely to use living off the land techniques in environments that are particularly not locked down or well monitored. So how do you defend against them? Some researchers recommend purple learning, having red teams apply living off the land tactics in an exercise to ensure that blue teamers and security operating system center personnel can detect and thwart these techniques. He also suggests whitelisting practices with this very tactic in mind. Some researchers say that application whitelisting goes a long way in blocking attackers, providing it's tuned to prevent execution of various unusual programs in the operating system. Now, researchers can go to GitHub for a list of the binaries, scripts, and libraries that are often abused in living off the land attacks. These are things like bash, command key, shell 32, run DLL 32, and well more than 100 others. Most users have no need to run these programs, and organizations can configure their application whitelisting tools to prevent execution of the most suspicious of them. Now, what happens is with application whitelisting, attackers find that their tools won't run on the target operating system. They will find that the operating system components will still run, so attackers turn to those. It's a very pernicious way of doing things. The operating system itself is a treasure trove of programs and scripts attackers can use. So what you have to do is be careful with permissions and especially the tools that can be used by non admin accounts. A lot of these can be used by the attackers against the victims where they find the access available. Raising alerts for humans to investigate when all of these admin and testing tools are used is critical. If you're going to be using them, whether it's in a simulated attack, a pen test, or during normal network and system maintenance, that's something that should be scheduled and planned. By employing proactive security with 24/7 monitoring, you can get around many of these attack vectors. So I'm going to turn now to my co-host. You know, Bam, with your emphasis on security, is this kind of malwareless attack something that, is high on your radar screen?
So, yes and no. It is on my radar, but maybe not high on my radar. I first read about this midway last year. I believe it was in a CrowdStrike report. And we are increasingly seeing things that, novel attacks. And we see this even in the transport and inbound, where my specialty is in terms of protecting web applications. But I think this type of thing is because of, in your words, I had to look up pernicious while you're talking. Because of the pernicious nature of the attack, it's designed to fly below the radar, and it's going to be very hard to detect. The organizations that are able to respond to this are going to be ones that are much more evolved, right? That they have dedicated threat hunters, more experienced SOC analysts who are able to suss out abnormal behavior because they've got the experience to know what normal looks like, and because they're doing a number of other sort of good security hygiene things in terms of managing their server and other system endpoints within their infrastructure. So it's not something that's on top of my radar because of where I generally look at security through the lens of B2C or B2B type business over the internet. But I do see increasingly this being talked about in the world of endpoint security and infrastructure security. And it's going to be something it's going to take more than the tools that we have available today. And it's going to take significant personnel talent.
Well, one of the things that is absolutely for sure is that the attackers are going to continue to evolve their tactics, which means we've got to evolve our tactics to defend. The good news is that there will always be plenty for us to talk about here on TWiET. And speaking of lots to talk about, I know we have plenty more, especially with a guest that's coming up. So, Lou, I'm going to turn it back to you to take us into the next part of the show.
Thank you, Curtis. That's right. We do have a guest to drop some knowledge on TWiET right after we come back. But before we get to that, we do have to thank another great sponsor of this week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Thinks Canary. Now, with everything that's going on in the world, Thinks Canary wants you to know they are here for you. Now, data breaches are on the rise, and companies usually find out too late that they've been compromised. Even after spending millions on IT security, they might just find out too late that things are going bad. Now, Canary is designed to be installed, configured, and most likely forgotten in minutes. Now, when you get ready, because Thinks Canary has a great solution that's going to help you catch breachers in the act. Now, if you do need to be alerted, Canary gives you the option of deciding how to do so. Email or text on your console, Slack, webhooks, syslog, or even their API. Now, alerts should be dead simple, easy to work with, conforming to your needs, not the other way around. And Thinks Canary has made it very easy and possible. You won't be inundated with alerts either. You get to only ones that matter. Two things all companies should know when it comes to data breaches: hackers take the path of least resistance. That's right. Your staff is sometimes the path of least resistance. It takes up to an average of 191 days for a company to actually realize they've been breached. Now, here how Canary works. It actually looks identical to a router, a switch, a NAS server, a Linux box, or a Windows server, so attackers can't tell the difference. Now, Think's canaries don't look vulnerable. They actually are valuable on your network, and they look like very appealing to those attackers when they jump in. Now, you can put fake files on them. You can enroll them in Active Directory. When attackers investigate further, they give themselves away, and you are instantly notified. The company behind Canary has been in the security game for almost two decades. They've trained companies, militaries, and governments on how to break into networks and have used that knowledge to build Canary. Now, Think's canaries are deployed all over the world in all seven continents and are one of the best tools against data breaches. Visit canary.tool/twit for just $7,500 per year. You'll get five canaries, your own hosted console, upgrade, support, and maintenance. And if you use the code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off the price for life. We all know you'll love your Think's canary, but if you're not happy, you can always return your canaries with their 2-month money back guarantee for a full refund. That's canary.tool/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box. And we thank Think's canary for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, our guest for today is no stranger of Twiit. He's a returning guest and an expert in network performance management, Mr. Tim Titus, CTO of Path Solutions. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Lou. Great to be here.
Great to have you back. Now, I do want to bring my entire panel in because we have some really interesting set of topics here. Now, we know that in the emerging markets today, we're starting to see the whole idea of NetOps and SecOps, kind of the blur the lines between those. Can you maybe take us to why we're seeing those lines being blurred?
So I think Curtis knows this. You guys might not know. I'm a huge history fan, and I'm actually getting a whole lot of streaming history these days, so this is a good thing for me. But history teaches us an awful lot of lessons. And so if you look back to, for example, TWA Flight 800, it crashed about 25 years ago. The NTSB dove in, and they started researching to try and find out what's going on. And they're typically looking for mechanical failures or human factor failures. At the exact same time, the FBI dove in and said they're looking to see if this is a potential crime. Now, this whole thing turned into a bit of a fiasco because both of those teams fought against each other to try to preserve crime evidence or to try and collect evidence a certain different manner that's necessary to determine chemical forensics. And so they both fought with each other to try and determine what happened. Eventually, they came out and said, okay, it's frayed cabling in the fuel tank that caused this crash. The problem is that this lesson that is taught is that you have NetOps teams that say, hey, there's an outage to this service, and they start researching this from, is there a cabling failure? Is there a switch failure, a router failure? Is it a configuration failure? What caused this outage? And they start researching with that angle. Then you have a SecOps team that at the exact same time jumps in and says, we're trying to see, are we under an attack? Was this configuration change made maliciously? And so you have two teams that are coming at this from different angles. And the problem is if they don't cooperate, they're going to step on each other. They're going to create political issues which don't need to be created. Simply because they're coming at it from different perspectives. And so this is really what's causing more of these companies to say, we need NetOps and SecOps to work better together rather than be separate siloed organizations.
I mean, so we talked a little bit about how the fact that these two things have been siloed and how organizations need to start getting ready. What type of information needs to be brought to actually help teams determine what's happening and how to bring these two things together?
So I guess that's the interesting part, is there's a lot of NetOps software that focuses on just the NetOps. And then there's a lot of SecOps software that you go out and get solutions that focus just on the SecOps side. And they'll provide each for their own purpose. They'll provide 100% of the data set of what those teams need, but there's no crossover. And the problem is that you can have flow information on the network side that's focused on performance. You can have SNMP information on the network side that's focused on configuration and operations. Then you have syslog information as well. Then you have on the SecOps side, you have a SIM system that's digesting tons of syslog. You have NetFlow information as well that's trying to interpret the communications path, the communications flows that are happening throughout the organization. But again, it's a slant is put on that data. And the problem is that this means that both of those tend to be creating their own silos of information because of the slant that's put on each of them. What this means is you have organizations that the NetOps team says, gee, everything's clean, it must be a security problem, and they start finger pointing, and you have then the security team that says, our tools, we have no indications of compromise, there is nothing going on here, that's a problem with your network, and it's a finger pointing exercise. And that's because both of those sets of tools are really designed to only provide siloed data. And so that's the world that we currently live in, with this siloed data for each of those teams, telling them almost what they want to hear of, there's no indications of compromise. And the network team says there are no outages or nothing that is causing this outage that is equipment failure related. And so therefore they sit there and say, gee, is it your problem? Is it my problem? And they don't know.
So we've talked a little about what information they need, but there's always a lot of roadblocks here, right? And I would say it would be interesting to go through some of the current limitations of what's preventing NetOps and SecOps teams from working together. Can you maybe go through some of those?
Yeah, it's really is that you have, again, the two different perspectives is the problem, is that it's the, you know, we're looking and hunting for a bad actor. And if you can't find the bad actor, then you're going to presume, and this is just human nature to do this presumption, that you are not seeing anything that's causing this issue. Everything's fine on our side. Therefore, it must be something with the NetOps team. The NetOps team will sit there and say everything's fine on their side. And so they look and say it must be a security problem because we can't see the problem. And the problem is if both of those teams can't see the problem, it's not that the problem exists in the other area. It's not that the problem exists on the other side. It's that there's not enough information and visibility to give either side the confirming clue saying this is actually what's going on. So you're not getting enough depth and crossover of information on the network monitoring software, and you're not getting enough depth and crossover on the security operations software to be able to bridge the gap and say, this is what's actually going on.
So now we've definitely identified the gap. Can you maybe go through what TotalView Security Operations Manager does and what it's designed to do?
So this is exactly the problem that we figured we'd target, is that we already have really deep and broad visibility into the network of NetOps, of being able to say, here is where you're dropping packets. Here's why you're dropping packets. Here's what's going on in that environment. If you want to pull up the network diagram, we have a full visibility into the network and how it's connected, how devices connect, how traffic is passed. And we figured with that data set, we have some really valuable things for the network team, but we also looked at this and said, there's a lot of valuable things here for a SecOps team. And what we figured we'd do is we'd add additional information here to allow you to solve SecOps problems. At RSA, just a little bit over a month ago, we released and announced our Security Operations Manager. And really what it's focused on is being able to find security issues throughout the environment, be able to show you risks throughout the environment. If you want to show the security risks dashboard, for example, we can tell you the footprint of your environment, how large it is. We found actually a lot of security experts, you ask them, what's your footprint? And they'll say, well, we have about 1,000 nodes. In actuality, they might actually have 3,000 nodes. They might have 5,000 nodes. They tend to be off by an order of magnitude because there is not recognition of all of the BYOD devices, all of the IoT devices in the infrastructure. The fact that the network is much larger than they think just means that they're not covering the security exposure that they're responsible for. So we figured we'd make sure we expose what is the footprint, what are the vulnerabilities on switches, routers, gateways, what are the exposures regarding uncontrolled DNS. If you have users that are going straight out to Google DNS, that's a problem. They should be using the corporate DNS structure. They should be using OpenDNS or Umbrella if that's what they're configured to use. They should not be going out direct to the outside. And we can tell you, here are the bad players that are going direct to the outside that create some exposures. So we can show that off. We can find rogue IT devices. Also, Unsecured communication. If you have HTTP in operation, Telnet, we can help tell you where those are so that you can lock them down. And so it's really getting a full visibility into what's going on in this infrastructure so that you can control that. Additionally, being able to see your geographic risks. So we, if you want to show the security risks geographic view, we can show where your data is going. And if you have a whole bunch of flows that are going to Nigeria, you can see that. Find out this is communication going to that Nigerian prince's organization who's going to send you some money. You can see those communications. And in this case, we have a whole bunch of SQL queries going off there. So that might be data exfiltration. So being able to alert on this and see what's going on just gives you the understanding of where's our data going. Who's getting our data? Are we losing data? So it's really putting together that data set so that both teams can work with the same data set so that you have network teams and SecOps teams that are both saying, here's what is actually going on because we both share the data. We both have this visibility into what's going on. And instead of saying, my tool says this, and you're just finger pointing, you can now use the same tool to say, here's what's actually going on.
So now that we kind of understand a little bit about how this is going to help the NetOps group, what about SecOps? What kind of options here and what kind of value does it provide them as well?
So additional to the vulnerabilities and the exposures and the footprint information and the rogue IT, what we're doing is we're also addressing SOAR. And what we found is there's a lot of promise in the world of SOAR, and so far, a lot of the promise involves a lot of coding. You're having to code your playbooks into the system, and a lot of that coding isn't done yet for a lot of organizations. Or they might not even be advanced enough to say, gee, we have a full playbook done, and they say, I still have a 30-minute exercise to be able to go through and research these events, these security events that our SIM or our IDS is triggering out. Okay, great. If we put all of this information that you need to resolve that event on one screen by telling you, here's the switch and port where that IP address is connected. It's connected to the finance switch, port number 8. By the way, it's a Windows 10 PC. Bob is logged in. And by the way, Bob is a domain admin. If we gave you all that information and then also said, you're running a process on that box called crypt32.dll that's taking up 80% of the CPU, well, that'd be suspicious. Okay. If this box was also sending communication flows off to a server in North Korea, and that server was actually flagged as a known command and control server, I think everyone would say, yeah, there's enough clues here in this one screen to be able to say, this is a bad actor. It's not a false positive. Let's quarantine this off the network. And with a one button, you can quarantine that. And the purpose here is that you get all of this on one screen so that you can quickly look at it and say, yeah, within 1 minute, I can respond to this event. Meaning if you get 100 events in a day, you can respond to all 100 of those events and still go home at the end of the day.
So when we come back, I do want to bring my co-host back in because, of course, they have a bunch of questions and a bunch of topics to discuss. But before we get to all that, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech. And that is IT Pro TV. Now, you're a busy professional, right? I'm a busy professional. It can be difficult to learn new skills or develop skills to make a career change. Well, IT Pro TV has made learning IT and finishing IT certifications possible for everyone. You will be able to learn quickly at your own pace when your actual time allows it. Now, IT Pro TV really has a super interesting set of content. It offers binge-worthy learning for IT professionals and always keeps their content fresh as the IT world is constantly changing. It's in the core values to actually have their content current and relevant and up to date. Now, right now, with everything that's going on in the world, travel restrictions, social distancing, and shelter in place, it's never been a better time to visit itpro.tv/enterprise and sign up for the remote learning opportunities that IT Pro TV has to offer. Now, it's binge-worthy for all IT professionals, fresh content for the IT world that's constantly changing. They have the latest exam objectives, new certifications, update software releases, redesign interfaces, and much, much more. Now, there are over 4,000 hours of IT training that they offer, and they have the official video training partner for the CompTIA and 12 CompTIA on-demand courses, including CompTIA A+, Network Plus, and Security Plus certifications. And for those organizations out there who might be thinking of canceling an upcoming conference, IT Pro TV can help deliver and facilitate virtual conferences. That's right. They can help take a conference online with general sessions and breakout sessions with speakers live in studio or remotely. See how IT Pro TV can make it easy for you to grow your career. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise and use the code enterprise30 to receive 30% off. That's itpro.tv/enterprise and use code enterprise30 for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV, build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. And we thank IT Pro TV for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, I do want to bring my co-host back in. Curtis, I want to throw it to you first, because obviously this convergence of NetOps and SecOps is an interesting idea, because obviously these two teams tend to work in silos. What do you got? What do you think of these types of teams joining together forces?
Well, I think that it can be effective, but Tim, I've got a couple of questions I want to ask. And the first one comes from an organization that I become aware of this week. Some people have queried me about it. And that's one where doing some network transitioning, application transitioning as well, they decided that the DevOps, the NetOps way to do things was to essentially do no testing. Just go ahead, make the conversion, throw it into production, and then fix it on the fly. First question is, does that sound like a great understanding of how this is supposed to work, that you just go ahead, throw everything into production, and, if you will, change the tire on the running car? And second, are the tools that we're talking about able to make that something that's going to keep the users from suffering?
So you mentioned that, and it's a little shocking because, again, this goes back to an interesting history lesson. If you think back to the days of the dot-com boom, is that companies wanted to get their product out as fast as possible because first to market would win. The thing is, over time, what we've learned is it's not first to market, it's best to market. Yahoo was first in the search market, but Google won in the end. So it's really best to market. And so organizations that are doing this first to market, get something released, get it out today, versus let's hold back and actually get the right thing out tomorrow, I think that's actually a better, sounder, safer strategy, especially in the light of all of the security breaches. Is they get something out today and it doesn't have proper security, they're going to be in a world of bad PR by the fact that on their release day, they get hacked.
Well, I appreciate that, and it will shock you to hear that I absolutely agree with your take on this. And the next one I think is important as well, because when you were talking about using the tool to find out where the problem lies, you know, we have as a business culture been big on trying to figure out who to blame. Is there a difference in the way you would use tools like this if your goal is to find out what to fix rather than trying to decide who to blame?
So I think depending upon the outage severity, the first thing you want to do is work on fixing the problem. Sadly, I say in today's coronavirus world, you have most of the attention on working on fixing the problem, and secondarily people talking about who to blame. I'm of the part that I figure let's help work on fixing the problem, and then maybe a year or two down the road, let's actually worry about the blame part, because that's just not important right now. As far as the tools go, though, I think really is people's jobs are on the line if they don't fix the problem first. Being able to duck and cover and say, well, it might have been a security problem, but we're not going to divulge that. I don't think anyone builds tools to specifically help solve a political problem. Of course, if you could solve a political problem with software, I think your software would sell off the shelves. But I think it's that the business need is primarily to identify where the problem is. But then on the security side, there is logging that you can help identify and say, oh, it was Bob that made the configuration change that caused the outage. So you do want to have that traceability from a security standpoint to say, well, is Bob actually just, did he goof up? Or is Bob a malicious actor and he's on his way out the door? And so having that logging and ability to track that is important.
Well, one of the questions that I've got is, as we're figuring out who can help fix the problem and where the problem is to be fixed, in sort of the traditional viewpoint, we would stop everything, go to the fix, do some tests, figure out whether the fix has been applied properly, and then go back to production. What change in mindset do you need to have going on in your organization if you're going to be doing this cycle of understanding where issues lie, understanding who owns them, and getting them fixed is all to be happening in real time versus that sort of traditional waterfall methodology that so many of us grew up with?
And this comes down to process. And this is where I think the industry and management teams are learning about how to implement better process. If I go back to the TWA 800 crash, it's that taught the government agencies that they need to learn how to cooperatively work. And there's actually some wonderful case studies out there if you want to search for them. But how to cooperatively work together to say, we're looking to solve this problem, whether it's a bad actor, a terrorist act, or whether it's actually a mechanical failure, or was it pilot error? And the same sort of thing happens in the network where you need to have the SecOps management team work together closely, saying, what does your information say? What does our information say? Can we share that information? Because you might have a low-level network operations person that has the clue in his hand saying, here's what actually happened. And that clue is really, it's going to answer the entire mystery. But if the SecOps team is confident saying, gee, we think this is a hacking attempt, because they start to see some indications of compromise, the fact that they start to see something, they're going to start building that story, and it's that they're going to convince themselves that's what it is when it might not be. So that close collaboration between those teams is something that's going to be required for the organization to move to that next level.
So Tim, I'm going to jump in and ask about, you know, where talent and staffing comes into this and even training. My experience tells me that, you know, when I talk to somebody who's an application developer, when I talk to somebody in SecOps, quite often they have very little network background, right? They know just maybe only a little more than your average person hooking up a router at home. And I think that contributes to a lot of the underlying issues. There's assumptions that this is sort of dumb plumbing and it should just work, when those of us who have worked in network engineering know that there's quite a bit that goes into it. How much do you think that, you know, cross-training and really seeding security concepts into the NetOps team and seeding, you know, fundamental networking concepts and skills and abilities in the SecOps team that can help us, you know, bridge these gaps and make tools like Path Solutions even more effective?
Yeah, you just nailed it. That's exactly what needs to happen to a greater degree, simply because there are a lot of SecOps folks who they might be an analyst and it's like they have only, you know, let's say 3 years of experience, and yet they've never dealt with a spanning tree topology reset. And they're going to think, hey, we're being attacked. We're having all sorts of disconnects. And no, this is something that's pretty basic on the networking side. And so that cross-pollination of knowledge is going to become more and more important so that you don't have both sides kind of raising the alarm when there's not actually a problem on the security side. It is a standard networking failure. And so that cross-pollination between those teams would be really valuable. And so management needs to come up to those teams and say, okay, every month we need to have these two teams teach each other some of the tricks of what goes on. Because in one sense, having them both start to become a master of the other domain just means there's going to be more brain power in the room when a problem actually comes to roost.
So, Tim, go ahead. So, Tim, are there tools available in the skill set to kind of, or in Path Solutions toolbox to kind of help foster that, to make it, you know, easier for a security person to pick up network skills and a network person to pick up security skills? Is there, you know, sort of tool tips and tricks, things like that, that, that help foster that kind of cross-pollination?
Yeah. So part of what we've built is the ability to have a heuristics engine built into the solution. And the heuristics engine will help analyze network conditions to be able to say, give you a plain English answer of, do you realize you have a cabling fault on this interface and you're dropping 17% of the packets? So with these plain English answers, it means a security person could look at it and say, I'm seeing some packet loss here. That's what's causing the disconnect. And it's a cabling fault. They can go up to the network team and say, hey, look what I found. And the network team will confirm that. Likewise, the network team might look and say, gee, there's an exposure over here that really shouldn't exist. I thought we got rid of all the telnet. Apparently, there's still telnet going on in our environment. Let's shut that down. So it does allow for both of those teams to be aware of and start working towards each other. Because again, if they can work towards each other and mesh really well, then they're going to get more problems solved at the end of the day because they have an understanding of what the other side is dealing with.
Tim, thanks again. We're running a little low on time. It's always great to see you. Can you maybe give the, we wanted to give you a chance or an opportunity to maybe tell the folks home where they can go and learn more about TotalView and where they can learn more about some of the other options and solutions that Path Solutions offers.
Sure. Just www.pathsolutions.com. If you want, you can end up watching some of the videos there about our product. We have a really good list of features for security, for network ops, telecom ops as well. But if you contact us and want to end up getting pricing, we have special pricing. Just mention Twyatt.
Thanks again. Well, folks, you've done it again. You've sat through another hour of the Best Dang Enterprise podcast in the universe, according to 9 out of 10 SecOps on call AI options. But I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, starting with our very own Mr. Brian McHenry. Bam, what's up and coming for you in the coming week, and where can people find you and anything about your work?
Well, I'm heads down trying to bring together F5 and Shape Security as one company and be a big part of that effort. In the meantime, head on over to f5labs.com. Tons of free cybersecurity, cyber threat research that you can use to inform your strategies, as well as I highly recommend for any of the CISOs listening, there's a CISO to CISO corner where we have articles written by CISOs for their peers, and it's a tremendous resource.
Thanks again. We also thank you very much, Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, people love reading your stuff. Where can the folks go and find you and all of your work?
Well, as always, they can find my work at Dark Reading, and especially at the edge of Dark Reading. Have a number of things going up about the coronavirus, about various bad folks and what they're doing. And today, a piece went up that I would love the Twyatt Riot to comment on. I've got some alternative security products that we sure wish were available. Love your take on it. Love to hear about it, both here and on Twitter at KG4GWA. Stay healthy, everybody.
Thanks again, Curtis. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to get your enterprise goodness and your IT news, and we want to make it easy for you to get your enterprise goodness and your enterprise news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes that we've had over the years, all the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information, and the links to the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, next to those videos, you'll actually get those helpful subscribe and download links as well. Get your audio version, your video version, or your HDU video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices. Of course, you can also listen on any one of your podcast applications as well. It's really the best way to stay on top of your enterprise and IT news. Now, after you subscribe, share the gift of Twiat with your friends and family members and coworkers. We definitely want to keep doing this show with your support and with your sharing. We can definitely continue to do that. Now, if you've already subscribed and you are available live at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on Fridays, we do this show live at live.twit.tv. Come see how the show is run. Come see all the behind the scenes, the banter that we have, the fun that we have during the show. That's at live.twit.tv. Plus, if you're going to watch the show live, you might as well jump into the chat room live as well. We have the irc.twit.tv. We have a really great set of characters in there. We have a great discussion during the show. They give some great content and great questions. And we really would love you to have and jump in there as well. Now, if you can't watch the show live and you still want to be part of the amazing community out there, you can come join the 24/7 discussion on our amazing new community location at twit.community. All the hosts are out there. The Twit community is out there. The Twiat Riot, guest information, discussions, and all about technology. Just go check it out. Come join the community at twit.community. Remember, you can always follow me at twitter.com/LouMM. There you can actually post all my enterprise tidbits. Of course, conversations with great people like you. And of course, I also post what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft. And in fact, if you want to check that out, you can always check out dev.office.com. There we post the latest and greatest ways for you to customize your office suites to be more productive for you and your organization. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support us each and every week doing This Week in Enterprise Tech, and we couldn't do it without them. So thank you so much for their support. I also want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, including all the engineers at Twit. They're doing all the behind the scenes. They're doing remote working. They're doing really great job of making this seem really seamless and consistent. We really appreciate all their work. We also thank our Mr. Brian Cheever. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer as well. He does all the bookings and the plannings for the show, and we couldn't do the show without him. So thank you for all his support. He's now retired from his current job. He has a lot more time maybe to jump in and be the co-host and the producer. Just kidding, Cheever. We're really grateful for all your support. So thank you. Well, now before we sign out, we have our TD for day, Jeff. Jeff, thank you so much for everything. But of course, we have our tradition. What was the major topic of today's show?
Well, the continued importance of cybersecurity, even when there's a global pandemic going on and all the bad guys trying to take advantage of the situation.
I would say that's really good. That's really, really close. I would say tools for people to get off your lawn, but I would say that was really close, and I appreciate your efforts, but maybe next time. Thanks again, Jeff.
You're welcome.
And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet. We'll be right back.